This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 4th of July, 1959. The title of this lecture is HCO Worldwide and Research. This lecture is 51 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Thank you. I decided to let you work yourself up this time. Well, how you doing?
Fine.
Good.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing. Well, sir, here we've got another Congress. And very happy I am to be giving an American Congress. Well, there's been a lot of water over the bridge. Since I last had the pleasure of talking to you. But it's still standing. We built one. Actually, at this Congress, I've got to dove in. That is to say, I haven't got anything to talk to you about. There's really been no developments. There's nothing been happening at all, particularly. So I got to dove in. And I got to show you part of the bank. And that sort of thing. And I hope you'll forgive me. And we're going to start right away with a travelogue. Is that all right?
Sure.
All right, let's bring out a screen. You thought I was kidding, didn't you? See, you thought I was kidding. All right, let's take the lights off. All right, let's show them a picture. Now, this is England. This is England. This is the mother country that we revolted against many years ago. And this is an area where American tourists all bring their Leicas. And they come down and they bring their Leicas and they shoot pictures and hope the Queen will appear. Well, actually, we're usually too busy. I've been over looking at this scenery one way or the other. I'll step over on the other side so you can see the other side of it, too. Now, this is Big Ben. This is Big Ben. You've heard of Big Ben? The BBC uses Big Ben, and they have a lot of things to... use it for. They have culture, and culture, they have culture, and Big Ben. Okay. And these places American tourists hang around and look at, and they show all sorts of various things. All right, now, you've seen some pictures of London. Now, this has got you oriented now in the British Isles. That's the plot. And something has happened recently which I will have to tell you about. I hate to own up to things like this, but we are making progress in some quarters of the world. A few months ago, I decided that a single point of emanation for each type of Scientology activity was absolutely necessary because the comm lines were getting too heavy and too jammed one way or the other. HCO franchise holders in the country were not getting service. Please growl. We weren't getting bulletins through. We weren't getting a lot of things through. So I did something very interesting. A fellow rushed up to me. I don't know how he got the idea, but he said, "Would you like to buy the luxury estate of the Maharaja of Jaipur in Sussex?" I'm very flattered. I'm very, very flattered. And he said, "Well," he says, "we let you have it very cheap." I said, "What's cheap?" Thinking, you know, $2-3 million. And He said, well, it's, and he quoted a price about the same as a California bungalow. Show it to him. This is the luxury estate of the Maharaja of Jaipur, who sold it to me for 2 bits and a collar button, and is the present home of HCOWW. It's a nice little shack. It has 11 very modern bathrooms. We haven't been in all the bedrooms. We haven't found them all yet. I'm not joking, this is true. The place has a drawing room, a ballroom, and a lounge, and a cinema, and a swimming pool, and a fish pond, and a fishing lake, and 55 acres of grounds, and gardens, and trees, and all of that sort of thing. Show them another picture. Beautiful Sussex parkland. This house was built in 1733. It's only had 6 owners since, of which I'm the 6th. And it has solid oak paneling and all the interior walls and so on. That's all from the original. And it hasn't had a scratch on it. I don't know how the wars have never grabbed it up for officers' quarters. But they never have. They've never even taken the big iron gates off of the place. It, of course, is a source of great delight to some members of the family, but it's a terrific source of delight to HCOWW. They all figure they're going to be able to go down there and go to sleep. I got a surprise for them. I didn't take these pictures, by the way, to show to you. There's a swimming pool. There's a pleasure garden just on one wing. This room you see the edge of has a 100-foot mural in it, 12 feet high, painted by John Spencer Churchill. And it shows monkeys at a pleasure resort. And they're all dressed like people and so on. Wonderful place. Has long walks. That's white wisteria. I don't know if you've ever seen any before. I never had. And there's another picture side view to show what a pile of stone the thing is. Now, the Maharaja imported an American soda fountain from Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's a Coca-Cola, and that's a full soda bar, and it's in the big winter room, a winter conservatory room. And these are the glass houses, and they play quite a role in the actual structure of HCOWW, which I will tell you about in a moment. You know, most people don't realize, but growing plants is very simple. You simply say, grow, thank you. And there's St. Hill. Now, St. Hill has a function and a purpose, and it gives us something new in Dianetics and Scientology. What we are actually doing here is to remove one set of communication lines of Dianetics and Scientology out of the economic stress of the society. In other words, we're going to take a set of communication lines that can run without income. Now, how are we going to do that? Well, it's a long story. In some ways, but as you know, early in my career, I was unfortunate enough to be a nuclear physicist, and there are ways to do things to marketing plants and so on, which permits them to be marketed at a margin of profit, you'd say about 70% compared to the average market gardener's 20%. And that 50% can go into postage and communication lines and so forth. This place is being set up now, so it'll have an income of 30,000 pounds or about $100,000 net a year to handle outflowing communication lines, pay staff, and that sort of thing. One of the things holding Scientology back is the fact of its dependency. Its communication lines can be broken for lack of finance and that sort of thing. So this is the answer on HCOWW. Just move it right out of it. Now, it takes a little bit to set up such a set of communication lines. It takes a little financing and that sort of thing, and squaring things around. You have to find some money in mouse holes. Actually, I found enough in my own mouse holes to buy St. Hill. And the actual setup in order to produce enough income in order to do this costs only 6 months of the annual gross. In other words, in the first 6 months of the annual gross, well, we'll return the whole cost of the installation. This very well then puts it up into probably mid-1960 before these lines start to float free. And I think that this is one of the things that's been stalling us down, and so I have taken the Bank of England by the horns, and we're doing something about it. Now, in the United States, perhaps July or August of 1960, the U.S. Center, built almost exactly along the same lines but using entirely different product, located at a point not now completely determined, will begin construction. Then we will have a set of lines. Of course, you already will be benefiting from HCOWW lines. And we'll have a set of lines in the United States of dissemination and so forth, which will be floating free of the actual income of the situation. We're also going to put one in South Africa, one in Australia, one in New Zealand, and so forth. Scientology is very big. Very few Americans realize it, but one out of every 37 people in the Union of South Africa is a Scientologist. You guys are really, really got your brakes on. I'm not kidding you. 5% of the people of the city of Perth have been through a PE course. It's really roaring abroad. And one of the reasons why it's roaring abroad is because I've been very careful about the economic stresses abroad. I'd have made it possible for the stuff to travel. And I shouldn't curse at you because basically you financed its foreign spread. Now that the U.S. government has seceded from Earth, we are probably the only international government on Earth. That's a joke. Or is it? Now, here we have a scene there where we're going to have at least one large research center in each and every continent and one island, New Zealand, on Earth. This is going right in down the line. Actually, finance is showing up with great rapidity. The problems are not tough. Now, the reason we've got to do this, I'll have to be frank with you and tell you. The reason we'll have to do this is because we're going to break the back of the research racket. The mental research racket. We're going to break its back. And you can turn that thing off and you can turn on the lights and I'll tell you how we're going to do it. The general situation in the world today is very interesting. We have a lot of madmen running around who have figured out a wonderful way of tapping governments, tapping private industry and so forth. They say, we will do you psychology research or psychiatric research and so forth. They account for many, many billions of dollars or pounds per annum throughout the world. They go to some school where some professor of some kind or another makes some motions with rats and they give them a certificate. They don't know how to do anything to anybody. They go cut up corpses and then treat the mind. I mean, I'm not being bitter now. As a matter of fact, I'm making an understatement. And I think those of you who are in the know will realize it's an understatement. And these fellows then go out and put the tag on tremendous numbers of corporations and people, and they say, we'll do you research programs, research programs, research programs. Well, those are not research programs. They're propaganda financing. That's propaganda financing. In other words, the money pulled in on these research programs pays psychologists, psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, and so forth. This money is paid back again into associations and organizations, and that money is then used to sell the idea that man is an animal, that socialism or God knows whatever all is a wonderful thing to do, and here we go. In other words, this is a pitch. If you doubt my words, look into it yourself, would you? It's the crime of the 20th century. All these people have to sell is something that was dreamed up in the 19th century. It's last century's psychology. Last century's warmed over meat. Psychology has its genesis 1879, Leipzig, Germany. The fellow who invented it was Professor Wundt. He decided that all problems of the mind could be studied by the study of animal tissue, and that this was the way it was. Now, that is psychology. That's what its genus is, 19th century. Psychiatry is Russian in genus and has been developed throughout the 19th century, and there haven't been any significant developments except prefrontal lobotomy in the 20th century. They're not making more sane people. Now, that's the long and short of it. The test of anything is, can it be eaten, or does it work, or something like that. I mean, we're peculiar in Scientology. We say things are very, very well, things are very, very wonderful, theories are gorgeous, but when you do it, does it work? That's something new in the field of the mind. That's so bright, shiny, new, that people haven't begun to understand it yet. If a man is a mental practitioner, can he make people sad, happy, brighter, well, change their personality, so forth, make them less psychotic? Can he alter the state of mental beingness? If he can't, he is not a mental practitioner. He is a fraud, a quack. Correct? All right. The research racket, which is going on, is that some vast sum is appropriated into the hands of some group. And this group then gets busy, and they write papers, and they read papers, and they file papers, and they do this with papers, and they do that with papers, and then they turn in reports, and then they go out and they look at something, and then they put monkeys in spaceships, and they come back and die, and they say, well, monkeys put in spaceships, die, and turn it in, and this sort of thing. This is hocus pocus and monkey business. Now, where we have this sort of thing, we have unlimited financing for contra survival philosophy for man. Is that right?
Right.
Now, this type of philosophy that's being stuffed into people these days is you can't change. There's nothing you can do about it. You might as well go lie down and quit. Man is identical to an animal. When you're dead, and you'll just never live again, and all of this sort of thing. That's what's financing it, this thing called a research racket. Now, I'm not bitter about it, but let me call something to your attention. With your assistance, and I do mean your assistance right here, the whole of the problem of mental structure, thought, life, life sources, and so forth, has gotten wrapped up in the last many years. And we haven't spent hundreds of billions of dollars. As a matter of fact, our research budget is very, very small. And yet we wrapped up the problem. So it didn't at all depend upon money. It didn't at all. It depended on a desire to wrap it up. And I'm afraid that desire was lacking elsewhere. Now, these may be bitter words, but they add up to this. Today, you believe, I'm sure you do, there's something not quite right about treating the mind. Or you know that somebody around you feels that it's not quite right to do something about man's livingness and beingness. Isn't that right? Really, you know, you don't have any right to be kicking back against an advance for man, and you don't have any right to let somebody else around you sit there and think there's something wrong with making men bright, that there's something wrong with making backward children well. Do you realize at this moment the whole Society for Mentally Retarded Children in Great Britain is embracing Scientology, and we are sweepingly wiping out backward children with the blessings of the leading societies in Great Britain right here at this moment. We're doing things in Scientology. Now, is there anything wrong with that?
No.
All right. Yep, the man out there in the street, in the office, and so forth, he has this idea that there's something wrong about mental research, or there's something wrong about this sort of thing, or it's not quite nice, or it's not quite right, and if anybody does anything to your mind, why, you must be nuts. And in order to get anything done with your mind or touch your mind, you'd have to be crazy or neurotic, and he's got all these opinions and so forth. And where did those opinions come from? Their genesis is the 19th century, the failures, the brutality, the complete quackery of psychology, psychiatry, and psychoanalysis. And they have been such failures that the whole world of the mind is now in question, so that the fellow in the street can say, well, it's not quite nice. Before you need any mental treatment, why, you'd have to be mentally ill. This guy can't do his job. He gets tired, he gets upset, he goes into flaps, and so forth, yet he isn't mentally ill. And any Scientologist could come along and fix him up, straighten him up, so he could confront what he was doing, couldn't they? All right. Now, is there anything wrong with a Scientologist doing that? No. Well, where the devil does this idea come from, mostly in the United States, that it's not quite nice, not quite right, or it's somehow illegal, or it's somehow something or other, to help somebody? Where does this idea come from? It must come from some group that doesn't want it to happen. Now, if that's the case, and if this group is being financed, and if it exists, what better public action could we take than to simply wipe out its economic lines? Would that be a good idea? Yeah. Now, if we're going to attack and wipe out the idea that mental research should be financed endlessly, I'm afraid that we had better have our own economic centrals very well buttoned up and not dependent on a research line. Don't you think that would be a good idea? Yeah. Now, the reason we can do it is because it's been done. Aside from researches now in the direction of OT, the first formula for OT is already being proved up, and we're making some right now at St. Hill. It's a big thing. We've gotten a long ways. Well, we've got it buttoned up, clear up to theta clear. We don't have to do any research. It's been done. But we do have to do dissemination, administration, and we have to make possible, in codified form, the work which has been done and what we know. Otherwise, those here and myself would fade away, and it'd all be in our memories, and the iron would fade off the magnetic tapes, and the books would go out of print, and that's that. Now, it's the first time this material has ever been brought together or assembled, and it'd be a very great shame to let it go by the board. So we've got to do, at this time, a coordination and getting it down and into the files. That's what we're fighting to do right this minute. And we've got to apply it and get it on up totally to the top. Well, it's not totally to the top. Not done all the way up along the line, but it's done to theta clear. And boy, that's about 400,000 miles further than I ever thought I'd have to carry it. What's this mean? It means we'll be able to write a book saying all the things that Scientology can do. And we can make a list of all of these things that Scientology can do. Oh, increase the reaction time of such persons as pilots, men under stress, so forth. Wipe out various conditions of mental stress under operation, such as the handling of switchboards and confusing activities of that character. Handle psychosomatic ills, handle insanity, do this, do that. We've got to make a list of all of these things that it can do, you see? And it's a rather long list. And we've got to put a preface in this book, and it's got to say, "Dear Executive, The work which you were financing in psychology, psychiatry, medicine, or otherwise, has already been done. Why are you still paying for it? And we make a list, and of course, reading that list, he will find the exact projects that he is financing. And we say, for a stenographic fee of copying our records and notes, you can have all the data which resolves your problem from the HASI. Therefore, we've got to be economically autonomous to do something like this, right? Hence, we have a program then, a program of codification, getting it into the file drawers. It's going to put a little economic stress on us to get it totally wrapped up and into the file drawers. We will still have service units. Service will still be charged for. Training and that sort of thing still be charged for, because these things cannot exist, actually, unless they are paid for. But as far as data and the availability of data and so forth, that's got to be free. It's got to be free before man can be free. As long as there are people around who are charging enormous sums to, quote, find out this data, which, by the way, they're now beginning to crib out of Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health. Very funny. I mean, I've read more medical reports lately. They're on page 28 or something like that of that old book. These guys are making fools out of themselves because they don't know the whole story. For instance, prenatal engrams. We left off of prenatal engrams for two reasons. One, they aren't directly connected with every influence and illness of man. And two, they're kind of silly. They're interesting, but they're silly, you know? And we didn't think anybody'd like these things, so we abandoned them years ago. As a matter of fact, it's much better to run a past death than a prenatal engram. If you're running a past death on somebody, you'll generally bounce up the track. That's very scientific terminology, but that's the way they'll be talking in 20 years scientifically. They actually bounce up into prenatals. Prenatals are secondary to deaths and things like this. I mean, it's quite interesting. But anyway, the prenatal was of no great vital use, but it was certainly interesting curiosa. And we've all had a lot of fun running prenatals. You get the pre-clear down on the couch, you get them all set, and you say, now, all right. The somatic strip will return to the engram necessary to resolve the case. When I count to three, the first phrase will flash. One, two, three. I hate you, 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 I hate you. You're all against me. I'm all balled up. I don't know what to do. You say, go on, go on, go on. Continue, continue. He goes on through, and it's an attempted abortion or something of the sort. Some other juicy family morsel. We run it out, and we find that it's been a heavy enough lock on some psychosomatic illness, actually, that the individual gets well. And who's bought this? Who's bought it? Lock, stock, and barrel. The American medical profession. That's all they're talking about at their conventions. They're writing about it in their journals. It's even in the popular ladies' magazines today. Prenatals, 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 prenatals. Well, they're talking about prenatals as though it's a fad or something of the sort. When the head of a large medical institute says the total thing wrong with this patient is the engramic injury sustained in the third month after conception, we've overwhelmed somebody. And that's true. That was what appeared the other day. Now, some of you have come here and you don't know too much about Dianetics and Scientology. You've seen some fun and horsing around at the beginning of the lecture. We might get a wrong idea when we use slang and we run down medicine, psychiatry, because everybody knows you're supposed to worship those. Don't you ever start worshiping Scientology or I'll come back and haunt you. You might get an idea that we're very, very rough and very ready, and we are. But we don't believe that it is the way you hold your pinky or weave in your adverbial clause that gets results in the field of livingness. We don't believe that it is, as it is in Britain, the exact color of the suit and the white edge of your vest which permits you to call yourself a mental practitioner on Harley Street. We don't believe that the world of authority should exist simply because it's authority. We believe it should also know something. We believe it should also be able to do something if it says it can do it. And today we're in the very loose and easy-minded state of mind of having exceeded all of our goals. We're basically faced today, the most terrible problems we have today are the problems of administration, the problems of finance, the problems of straightening out comm lines, of keeping people from goofing on them one way or the other, the problems of keeping ARC breaks from occurring all over the place about some subject or another, and also the problem of getting all the data written down and in proper files and so forth so it'll stay there. Those are our problems. Our problems of a few years ago were, my God, how do we resolve the case? Here's this fellow, he's ill, he's in terrible condition. What sort of an assessment, what sort of a this, what sort of a that, what engram is it, Ron, what do we do? And Ron would say, I'll get it. I'll keep up with these complexities you're handing me, one right after the other. And we'd eventually run something and we'd straighten it out and we would have won again. It was rough. And right here at this Congress and the seminars, if there's anybody in this audience who is sick, we're going to make him well with muzzle co-auditing just for the hell of it. Therefore, a Scientologist must be forgiven for an easy, even slightly careless frame of mind along certain things which have always been considered very serious. And certainly we can be forgiven for feeling supreme contempt for people who are running around busily dragging down billions of dollars so that they can get two mice to jump over two small hurdles and write a long paper on it. Now, I want to tell you about a win. I want to tell you about a big win. In 1950, in the spring, I think it was May 9th, wasn't it? Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health was published. Very, very short time thereafter, just a few days, the first foundation was created. Simultaneously with the creation of the first foundation in Dianetics, another foundation was formed. It was called the Ford Foundation. Have you ever heard of that foundation? That had unlimited billions. Its charter said to research and discover, if we can, answers in the field of the human mind. And that was the purpose of its foundation and formation. It was set up by Henry Ford, evidently in some sort of a trust fund. It came into fruition, but extended way forward from his time, and I'm not quite sure exactly
how they came to set it up, but they did set it up for that purpose with almost unlimited financing available. Do you remember that? And that was set up the same time as the first foundation. Up in Elizabeth, New Jersey. First foundation was first set up in my own house. There wasn't enough left of that house by the end of about 30 days to bother to pick up for matchwood. I mean, traffic. And it's pretty well been that way ever since. It doesn't look as hectic today because we have communication lines for the traffic to run on, and when they run wrong, we straighten them out fast. And it doesn't look quite so hectic today. You realize, though, don't you, that for every one student that was in Dianetics in 1950, we now have 10 students in Scientology. For every one person being processed in that day, there are 20 or 30 people in the world being processed today in the field of Scientology. I mean, it doesn't look quite so rawr, but it's lots bigger. Now, the Ford Foundation wrote us that in 1957, they had departed totally from all research in the field of the human mind. And that succeeded immediately after their receipt of a report by one of their people on the state of Dianetics and Scientology. And they spent hundreds of millions. And our research budget probably never ran more than $300,000 or $400,000. And we solved the problem, and they quit researching because we had. Now, this is the state of mental research today. We've won. It didn't depend as much upon finance as sincerity and dedication. There was an awful lot of activity, there was an awful lot of scramble, but we got a terrific amount done. We know answers today to things that man hasn't had a clue about. He didn't even know he was in the dark about. But we have, but we have answers today that man has been the slave of because he didn't have an answer for literally millions of years. We have answers to things that Lucretius, Spencer, all of the big wheels and the big brains, you know, in the field of psychology in its earliest goofball stages, they call it philosophy, epistemology, whatever you wanted to call it. And they were up against, they didn't know what these things were all about. You can go back and read the great philosophers and all of their great questions and all of their participial adverbial clauses. And you can read Immanuel Kant, and you can read all the questions he was asking of the universe. And you turn around to the data in the HCA, HPA course, and you'll find the answers. And now that's an awfully braggadocio thing. That's an awful thing to say. And I wouldn't say it, except it's true. Somebody was making a very great importance out of mystery. Somebody was making it seem to be totally unsolvable. Spencer, the great English philosopher, said that there was the knowable and the unknowable. And he had all kinds of formulas about the thing. Immanuel Kant invented transcendentalism, that there were things about which man would never be able to know anything ever. Well, you find him at point one on the tone scale. Now, today, at this Congress, I want to announce to you just the solemn fact of up to theta clear. It's a win. Now, what we can do beyond there certainly has nothing to do with man. It has nothing to do with man. We've left that point at Theta Clare. Our research from there on has to do with what? Well, man doesn't have an adequate vocabulary. Just because a guy's gotten a lot better and a lot smarter and because he isn't totally dependent on a lot of the things that he used to be dependent on at the state of Theta Clare, just because all of those things doesn't make him a god. That just sets up something else that's nonsense, you see? We don't even have anything. We'd have to invent our own terminology because we've run off the track. And anything we say, you see, after we've left the beaten path, it's subject to misinterpretation. You see, it's not true that a man, just because he is free, has become a god. Because god to some other people mean this, that, and the other thing. And it kind of gets all nonsense and religious and all mixed up. What you'd have to call him would be a free being or something of this sort. And maybe terminology of that sort will have to be evolved now. You'd say, well, this man is a free being. And then you could describe what a free being was. It doesn't have a bunch of connotations that people ought to burn joss to him simply because he can bust vases and empty milk glasses without a body. We're inevitably going to start seeing things that we haven't seen for just ages and ages. You hardly even read about them in the history books or in the books of magic or things of this sort. We'll start seeing these things now because we can't sit forever on the heads of people and say, now don't startle everybody, son. Go ahead, get out of your head and do what you please, but just don't go startling everybody and don't set up any cults. The one thing we're accused of doing all the time, you see, is the one thing we actually mustn't do. Suddenly overwhelm tremendous numbers of people. Just overwhelm all these people and then say, well, you had to put your nickel on the drum and after all, you know Joe. Joe died to save your soul. And, you know, I cry. What corn? Oh, so Joe got to be a free being, and he can now bust vases and empty milk saucers and lift textbooks and tickle pretty girls in the back of the neck without carrying a body along with him. Well, I don't see anything remarkable about it, but some people do. I remember the first time somebody in a foundation made somebody be in the center of a room without a body and speak. And with what enthusiasm this auditor, who was an enlightened auditor, as a matter of fact, he's right here in the audience, brought, there are two of them, I don't mean the other one. With what enthusiasm he brought this pre-clear, with hard slugging auditing, you know, on up the line, on up the line, on up the line, making it better and better and more able to reach and more able to do things and so on. And he finally got him up to a point where he could get him out of his head and in the center of the room and get him to speak. So he got him out of his head in the center of the room and he got him to speak. He said, go ahead, speak. Speak. Go on. The fella says, hello. This auditor says, what Ron said's true, and I'm never going to do it again. The other boy who did this, I think the pre-clear scared himself or something like that, but it didn't frighten the auditor. This sort of thing's been going on for some time. We've been running into oddities of one kind or another. And once in a while, you'll get bored with being on a meter when you don't register on meters, so you move the pin, you know, for the auditor, you know, moving it on. Mock up a picture of a path to death so it'll match the bop, you know. What you see from here on, I could tell you, I am not responsible for. But I don't dare, do I? Nevertheless, we are entering this sort of an area. How many thetans can be balanced on the head of a needle or something like that is not the question. It's how many needles can be balanced on the infinity of a thetan that we're trying to find out. But this is all just fun and games. Actually, we've got all the rules that compose it and so forth. You can have a lot of fun that way. Man changing his luck around and doing this and doing that. Making things appear and disappear. But you're just into fakirism. The fakers of India lying on stakes. And they go out the bottom and do it. And we're going out the top and doing it. And it hasn't anything to do with it. But the only great danger that stands in our future is sideshowism. You know, all of this sort of thing could get so spectacular with a lot of public startlement, you know, and people getting very awed about the whole thing, as seeing it as unnatural, something of this sort, and thinking it's manifestations of God and all of this sort of thing. It could be a lot of confusion up the line because of these things. But that's all right. We also have the rules of order and so on. We can get things straightened out. One thing we haven't solved as to how to get an operating thetan back into an aberrated condition if we have to. But next century, why, we'll all be worried about everybody being an operating thetan and nobody being slavish and obedient, and no hewers of wood and drawing of water, and the whole society will be falling down and in total chaos because everybody is free and happy, and everybody knows you can't have a good society without everybody being miserable in it. Now, we'll probably have to turn around and research just as madly how to make people aberrated. But if we do, we sure want in the file drawers all the answers to how to clear them up again. Now, we actually haven't been at this work for very long, and it's insouciant, it's impudent, and so forth. It's flying in the teeth of gods and philosophy textbooks to wrap up in a quarter, a third of a century, the problems of baffled man for the last 73 trillion. See, that's insouciant. It's impudent. It's flying in the teeth of things and that sort of thing. So we've done it, and it didn't bite. And we flew remorselessly into the teeth of things and found out they didn't have any teeth. And we fought this information out of the firmament and so forth and found that it wasn't too startling or too horrible a problem. We got into the general run of this thing. We understood it at last, and we understood the problem is solvable. We understand where we can go with it. Oh, we can smooth it down, and we can do this with it, and we can do that with it. But at this Congress, I can tell you quite flatly, we're there. We're there for this reason. We could take an ill person today who was acutely ill that we never before could process. When he was too ill to run an engram on him, ordinarily just plowed him in more. And today, in 20 minutes, hour and a half, something like that, the usual run-of-the-mill illnesses and the usual run-of-the-mill case, why, we can have them perfectly well and back on their feet again. Now, look, nobody in medicine can do that. There's no drug that can do it. Nobody in the field of mental research can do it. We've just out-created them to such a degree that we have to even admit to ourselves that we can do what we can do and stop hoping about it and just admit that, well, we're somewhere there. I don't say that the average Scientologist can take a psychotic person and process him to total sanity and 2 minutes max and that sort of thing. But I do say that given proper operating conditions, any halfway good Scientologist can handle insanity. So, given a person who is kind of stupid, we know we can make them brighter. given a person who is having personality difficulties or social difficulties of some kind or another, we know we can straighten those out. What we need is merely the time to do it and the relaxation to do it and so forth. We're facing right now the fait accompli. And we can no longer use as an excuse the idea that we don't know all there is to know. We don't know all there is to know, but we know all we need to know. And we can no longer use this as an excuse not to go into heavy action. So I am here in the United States at this Congress to tell you that we're beginning the jump off right here, right now, at this minute, on clear U.S. Are you with me?